Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, June 17th, 2010, going right into the show. Last week, June 10th, there was a little bit, a little bit of a mishap due to some technical issues. There actually was a show, but some technical issues, the WWCR replayed my show from the week before. So many of you that listened last week may have heard that, but there actually was a show that I had last week. And so I will be putting that on my archive page, on my web page. The show did air on the Reality Radio Network 2 hours later. The actual June 10th show aired on Reality Radio a couple hours later. And then the Friday night and Saturday morning airings on the Peters Network also played the June 3rd show. So, to make a long story short, if you didn't hear the June 10th show of last week, it'll be on my archive page, jmccsci.com, short for jmccannyscience.com. But jmcc, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in indigo.com, and just go to the archive page, and I'll have that posted later this evening. Also, just to give you a little bit of an idea of what last week's show was about, I gave a commentary on the smart electric grid meters that can measure everything you do in your house. Tell how many people are there, tell when you're there, when you're not there. So I gave a bit of a commentary on that. They want to put these in all over the country. This is Obama's smart grid. And the electric companies are just jumping to put one on your house so they can, every 15 seconds now and then every couple seconds in the future, measure your electric usage. And this can be used to monitor everything you do in your house. So, and I had a big series of shows a number of years ago about the water meters that could do the same thing and had the capability of reading signature chips that would be in products that you have in your house. So all kinds of other little add-on features to these devices. I also talked about a recap of my July 3rd show where I talked about an inverted funnel being placed over the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico and then extracting the oil. This was absolutely the way to go about this, but of course nothing has been done. It's becoming very apparent that this oil spill is more than just an accident. It's planned, and I just think it's another way of ethnic cleansing, just like Katrina was in New Orleans. We don't know what happened to half of the population of one of our major cities, New Orleans. Nobody knows where those people went or what happened to them. If they're still in existence or scattered all over, nobody knows. And so this is just another method of ethnic cleansing or moving people out of an area. Then I talked about the fossil fuel hoax and then I talked about where oil really comes from on the surface of the earth, and then deep oil, like in this oil spill, where does that really come from? Where did it come from in the construction of Earth as a planet? And then the very last topic last week, I talked about the process of molecular formation in comet tails up to viruses, including HC, the hydrocarbon molecules that we call oil and water, etc. How does that chemistry work in the electric tail of a comet? So at any rate, that was the June 10th show. So you probably would like to go back and pick up that. Like I say, I'll have the archive up shortly after this show, or certainly by morning, along with the archive of tonight's show on my webpage. Okay, the main science topics tonight, I'll be talking about the NASA. Everybody's heard the NASA big splash announcements that Earth is doomed and we're going to have solar flares that knock out our electrical grid system. And gee, NASA, it sure is amazing that you woke up and started repeating what I've been saying for years. But with their fairy tale science added to it. And then deep in the article where they're announcing this, they say that it's very unlikely that this will happen. anyway, I'll be doing some commentary on that and also talking about this upcoming solar cycle. Actually, the sun has been quite active lately, and many of you listening out there are now sitting in a rather severe weather situation. If you're in North Dakota, if you're in Minnesota, the upper Midwest, also if you're anywhere from Texas to Kentucky to Tennessee to down into Florida, any of the states east of Texas down into Florida, you could be experiencing, or you probably will be experiencing, some very intense small microstorm activity. These are building very rapidly, or out in the Antilles Islands, east of the Antilles in the Caribbean, a very big storm developing very quickly, bringing together three smaller storms and then developing into one major storm. That all happening, but I'll be talking about that. And then a bit more commentary on the Gulf oil spill, which I'm sure everybody has heard a tremendous amount of commentary, but I'm going to stay away from the comments that you have heard elsewhere, talking about, that'll be the last topic. And then I'll talk, if I have time, about the method I developed a decade and a half ago for stopping hurricanes as we head into this hurricane 2010. So, those are the main science topics. A few quick announcements. Elon Musk made an announcement yesterday, that they have signed with Iridium Communications. Now, Elon Musk has a business called SpaceX, and he's invested a lot of his private money into this company called SpaceX, which has developed rockets and other space hardware. They're in the process of developing launch capability, and they have a commercial rocket called the Falcon 9, which just completed a fairly successful test flight. And so they have signed 15 commercial launches with a company called Iridium Communications. And Iridium Communications launches and maintains satellites for communications. So at any rate, this is a private venture, completely private, no government involvement. And so NASA also is, I believe, looking at the SpaceX rocket system for launching, and the astronauts are complaining that they don't want to go on a commercially developed launch system because they don't think it's safe. Well, Mr. Astronaut, I don't know about the shuttle. You wouldn't get me walking into that thing. Anyway, I'm not going there tonight. But anyway, but SpaceX has some capability for launching from Vandenberg Air Force Base. Also, they have a facility in the Marshall Islands, and they can also launch from Cape Canaveral, Florida. Very interesting. So these people are movers and shakers, and this is where space has to go. This is a lean, mean development. They don't have all the pork and money that NASA has. And, there's a lot of people working at NASA who say, we don't have pork here. Well, you don't see it if you're working at NASA or a lot of those aerospace corporations, but it's there. Believe me, it's there. And you don't see it at the level that most people work at. But, up in the upper levels, lots of pork in NASA. Pork barrel, extravaganza, and really not much happening in NASA for all the money that is being spent. So, very much would like to see NASA go by the wayside, or at least properly managed. And I don't think that'll ever happen because there's too much profit floating around that agency. And you have to remember that NASA's real goal is to prevent you from getting into space. And once you realize that, then you understand that they're doing a very good job at what they're supposed to be doing, keeping the general public away from space, making it look incredibly difficult, and so difficult that you can't go there. On to the next topic. I'm going to talk about severe weather, and we are now in a very interesting time in the sun's development in this solar cycle. We're heading into a new solar cycle, and within the last week, starting really around June 10th or 11th, all of a sudden the sun kicked up and started flaring, and it had a big CME, coronal mass ejection, on the 11th of June, and this entire past week has been pumping out quite a bit of solar activity. We are now, Earthlings, in a relatively fast-changing, mild solar storm, which is the cause of much of this storm activity that you're seeing, all the way down through Central America, around the Pacific, but most of that's out over the ocean. So if you're listening in a sailboat or a ship out in the western Pacific, you might be experiencing some of this. But the people in, like I said, North Dakota, Minnesota, or if you're in the southeastern U.S., you'll be experiencing sometime through tonight, if you're not already, some very powerful microstorms with potential for, I'm sure, hail, tornadoes, high winds, thunderstorm activity. So at any rate, the key to all of this is the rapid change. We are always laden with a fairly significant amount of powerful electrical energy flowing by us in the solar system at all times. But a little item that I discovered in my studies and constantly watching the solar wind and the solar activity is that it's the rapid change in the solar activity around Earth and passing by Earth. It's the rapid change that causes the severe weather activity. And that's because as the solar wind comes by, it can set up a fairly constant kind of a magnetic structure, if you will, within the magnetic shell that surrounds the Earth. So when these rapid changes come, that kind of pulses. It's like pounding on a drum, so to speak. And that reverberates all the way down to the surface of the Earth. That can compress the upper ionosphere. And that's when you get these rapid changes that can drive that energy down to the surface of the Earth into storm activity, etc. So, at any rate, that's what's going on right now as I speak, and that's why many of you will be experiencing violent storms this evening, or at least severe storms. Right now there's a tropical storm called Tropical Storm Blas that's moving west about 15 degrees north latitude away from Mexico, moving out into the Pacific, but there are no named tropical depressions or other types of storms in the Atlantic. As I said, there's a very fast, very rapidly developing storm system a few hundred miles east of the Antilles Islands, and moving westerly, it'll be interesting to see if that develops into any type of low pressure cell or potentially tropical storm, hurricane, etc. All of this is possible, and I've been looking at the solar activity since the 11th, and as I said, we've had some significant solar flaring. It's going on right now. One very interesting one, in fact, it's on one of my computer screens here in the studio, and I'm watching it as I'm talking to you, and some of the flares coming out look like someone blowing smoke rings. So it's very interesting, and some very twisting, magnetically structured flares coming out. But activity that we have not seen on the sun for years. Remember that we had a lull of well over 2 years with no sunspot activity at all. But we still had Earth weather, we still had things going on here, so that pretty much negates some of those wannabe clowns out there on the internet who claim that sunspots cause Earth weather and Earth disasters. But it's really not true. There's sunspots are on the surface of the sun. They are related to solar activity, and they're not really coupled directly to Earth. They sometimes can be associated, sometimes, but certainly not as a regular formula. So anyway, if you see some of these clowns bouncing around the internet or on radio shows, that's a good commentary. Just remember that the sunspots themselves, those magnetic cool spots on the surface of the sun, really do not directly connect with Earth weather. We are a good 93 million miles away from the surface of the sun, and the solar energy, the solar activity, has to reach us by a number of mechanisms, including the solar wind. So the entire activity of the sun and how it affects us is very complicated. And unfortunately, you have some non-scientists out there who are trying to, anybody can be anything they want to be on the internet, unfortunately, these days. So, but anyway, back to the weather. We are going to continue to experience this severe weather throughout the next day or so. And it's hard to say what's actually coming at us from the sun. Scientists now have a little better stereographic view of the sun and can see a little bit better which direction these solar flares are coming. But we could have this severe solar activity throughout the next few days, changing our Earth weather and giving us some severe storm activity. And that these, now just a description, let me describe how this energy comes to us from the sun. The surface of the sun is very active. It's the fusion, the heat of the sun is actually at the very surface. If you've had any physics or college astronomy, they try and tell you that the fusion of the sun is deep in its core. It could not possibly be true. The surface activity of the sun is very indicative of fusion going on, and there's many other reasons to understand that the surface fusion, the fusion of the sun is at the surface of the sun. And that's one of the basic results of my theoretical work from decades ago, and it's one of the basis for understanding that there's an excess current of positive charge that's constantly pouring out of the sun, creating electrical circuits in the solar system. And we pass through these electrical circuits, causing our Earth weather. And so right now we're getting a bit of solar surface activity causing flaring, some what they call coronal mass ejection, CME is a term you hear regularly, where the surface of the sun basically lifts off and is blown into outer space. And if we happen to be in the direction of one of those flares, or CME, coronal mass ejection, then we can experience some severe weather. So keep that in mind as I then move on into the topic of NASA and its recent somewhat reactionary announcement. But at any rate, just a quick announcement about the water filters. Remember that those support this show. And I got a very funny email from a fan this week. Very irate that I would have the audacity to advertise water filters or something like that on my webpage. And so I just thought that was rather strange, but let me just explain to the people out there, you listeners, there's nobody that I know in radio today that is doing fantastic. I know that WWCR, for example, has been working very diligently since the flooding they've had down there. I believe the manager told me the other day it was about 45 or maybe 50 days now since the flood that went through Nashville, where WWCR is located. And they're working overtime to keep that station so you can listen to it. Many of the hosts are struggling financially to keep their show online. A lot of shows have gone off the air. I'll tell you, my show, I have supported myself for years and decades and will continue to do so. Let me make it perfectly clear. This is not a high income business. Let me be perfectly clear about that. And the people on radio are doing a lot of work to bring their information to you, and they make a lot of sacrifices. So let me just make that perfectly clear so that fans out there don't think that we're somehow here rolling in money and everybody is using you somehow to expound money into some kind of a system. That's just absolutely ludicrous. As I said, the vast majority of talk show hosts, first of all, do it out of dedication, and of course they need financial support to keep going. At any rate, that's just a bit of commentary so you understand a little better how this industry is it's a very tight industry financially. It's not a vast money maker like some people might imply, like this one fan. So at any rate, just for the people who like to use mail order, the Dalton water filters, $289, includes four filter elements, the Dalton Super Sterisol filter elements. You usually use one. I use one myself. That gives you three spares. Plus, you get the free Kato WRX 911 radio and free shipping to the 50 states, $289. And then also, one of the things that people really should be aware of, if you have any kind of a water filter, the stainless steel water filters, the replacement filters, you can get four of them for $130. That's two sets, and then add $10 shipping. So that's $140 total for the two sets of replacement Dalton Super Sterisol filters. In the address, the mail order address, JMCC, P.O. Box 58, Navarre, N-A-V-A-R-R-E, Minnesota, 55392. I'll give that out later if I have time at the end of the show. But any purchases, of course, go to support the show. On to the next topic, reaction of NASA announcement. NASA has come out, and this is the headline. I want to read this because it's just attention-grabbing to the public. It says, NASA warns solar flares from huge space storm will cause devastation. Now, I just want to read this again. It says, NASA warns solar flares from huge space storm will cause devastation. Now, if you read that, that would imply that the huge space storm already exists. Excuse me. Sorry. And that the devastation is imminent. Then it says Britain could face widespread power blackouts and be left without critical communication signals for long periods of time after the Earth is hit by a once-in-a-generation space storm. Now, when you read that, to me it says that the space storm already exists. It's already coming. It's on its way. But it's really not true. If you understand what it's really saying, when you get into the article, it says that these things could be likely. Now, it's like predicting the century, the flood of the century, for example. Every century that some area has a big, big flood, and they call it the flood of the century. It's the biggest flood, and it hits the highest flooding levels, etc. And one could say that inevitably there's going to be a flood of the century in a certain locale. Well, eventually you're going to be right, because probably it's going to rain there and you're going to have a flood. But that is really, now NASA's trying to put a date on this of 2013, because that's when they believe that the next solar maximum will occur. I'm pushing more for, thinking more as in terms of 2015. It's very, very difficult to determine where the solar minimum occurred, because we just had a flat sun, no sunspots for almost 2.5 years. Now, there's a record keeping, it's called the butterfly patterns. This is simply a record of solar sunspots in the northern and southern hemisphere of the sun, and it gives a count of sunspots per day. And this looks like something like a butterfly, so they're called butterfly diagrams. But basically, they give you the number of sunspots, and historically, these numbers have been kept for hundreds of years, because Galileo, with his first little telescope, was able to see and count sunspots. In fact, it caused him to go blind. That's why he was blind in his later years, because he was always looking at the sun through his telescope, so please don't do that at home. But the point is, these records have been kept for hundreds of years, but our recent solar minimum lasted for 2.5 years, not just a few months. So it's really pretty impossible to say exactly where was the solar minimum. The solar cycle really lasts 22 years, but the minimal, the cycle that we're dealing with here lasts 11 years between solar peaks. And so at about a 5.5 year period, then we would expect the solar maximum after coming out of the solar minimum. Remember that in around the year 2000, we had a double peak solar maximum, something that has never happened before. We had a very active sun, and then it started to drop down as if it were starting to drop off towards a minimum, and then all of a sudden picked up and just held there for months and months and months, and then finally started dropping off. So it totally threw the sun out of its normal rhythm. And then when we hit the solar minimum, for 2.5 years we sat there with no sunspots at all. So where was the solar minimum? Scientists, I think, are getting a little antsy to try and promote the idea that the sun's solar maximum will be in 2013, only 3 years away, but it could be as far away as 2015 and a half. The original solar peak, according to the old diagrams that go back for centuries, the old peak would have occurred in 2012, but that's not going to happen. We could get some solar activity in 2012, but the peak is at least going to be 2013, probably closer to 2015. But at any rate, just a little side explanation on that. But at any rate, there's a sensationalism, news-grabbing headline aspect to this NASA announcement, and one has to wonder, why on earth are they saying that now? Well, it's kind of like, I believe, NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, saying that we're going to have a bumper crop of hurricanes this year. They need funding. Those groups are splinter groups, or subgroups, you might call them, within NASA. And so they have to do things to keep their funding. And if there's no solar activity going on, then, gee, they might just fall by the wayside and not get their funding. But it's true that the sun is picking up in energy. There is a good deal of activity this past week. We're actually realizing that in Earth weather. So we are heading into a increasing activity with the sun. So NASA's announcement is not 100% ill-advised, but it's just the way they do it. And also, I might add that this is something I've been talking about for years and years and years. Not only talking about it, but very specifically the way these type of activities can happen on the sun. But then listen to the other method by which NASA makes its statement. It says, NASA said the superstorm would hit like a bolt of lightning. Isn't that an interesting term for a space agency that doesn't believe in outer space electricity? That's sure an interesting way to put it. And then they go on to say, and could cause catastrophic consequences. Now, this is amazing because that's what Velikovsky was saying. He said that the ancients, in their texts, in their traditions, in the information they passed down to us, talked about electricity coming from outer space. Of course, Carl Sagan and all the gurus at NASA poo-pooed this, said that Velikovsky had to be wrong. Well, isn't it hilarious and a bit, what would you call, ironic, that now NASA has to pick up the bolt of lightning from the sky commentary causing Earth catastrophes, consequences for world health, emergency services, and get this, national security. Wow, they're digging for everything they can to try and make this sound important. Well, it is important, but the problem is they don't give a scientific model for this prediction. It's just like saying, if you go to Vegas, or if enough people go to Vegas, somebody will win. Somebody's going to win the jackpot. They do every day in Vegas. You know, so if enough people go to Vegas, somebody's going to win. That's the equivalent statement that NASA is making. And it's not based on any scientific theory. It's not based on any other reality. Or, as I said, it's like predicting the flood of the century. It's going to happen. So this all came out of a space weather conference held in Washington, D.C. last week. And, of course, that's where NASA goes to get its money. Just another reading down into this article, almost probably halfway through, This is the sentence that I love the most. So the commentator, the NASA representatives, says the large swaths of the world could face being without power for several months, although he admitted that was unlikely. And then he goes on to talk about Europe and Britain, which have more sensitive power grids or fragile power grids, and they could be out for hours or possibly even days. But you have to understand, this already happens in many of those places where they have regular power outages just due to the fragile nature of their power grid. So in all, once they get done saying it, they're basically grabbing this big headline and then admitting that it's very unlikely that this will happen. And this is the standard form of disinformation, basically headline grabbing by NASA and other government agencies. Then it occurred to me as I looked at this, and something occurred to me as we looked down the barrel of an oil disaster in the Gulf that should have been prevented, that should never have happened, and that should have been that the cleanup facility should have been in place before. And I, 2 weeks ago on my radio show, I gave the solution to this, an upside-down funnel with a tube to the surface. It would contain it. All of that oil would rise to the surface and could be put into ships and basically contain all of that oil and harvest it and stop the oil spill that's devastating the Gulf. This upside-down funnel could be 100 or 200 feet in diameter. The shipping industry in many locations in the United States, including New Orleans, which is just north of the spill, would be fully capable of building such a funnel very quickly overnight and having it deployed out into the Gulf of Mexico over this oil spill, but it was not done. So at any rate, it made me think that we're actually heading into a time when governments could use disasters like this. And just imagine, say we have a solar flare. Someone could go in and meddle with our power system, shut it down, and blame it on a solar flare, and use this as a method of controlling the populace. And not that I think that anybody would ever do such a thing in our government. No, I would never imagine that. But it occurred to me that it would be very likely, and of course NASA would very much be the agency that would be the forerunner, and of course they've already planted the seed in all of our minds that solar flares can bring down the grid system. So who would be there to imagine that anybody would be using this in a nefarious manner to keep and control the public? As I said, it's becoming very clear to me that the Gulf oil spill was not an accident, and it's been maintained for months. Obama has done nothing. After a full 2 months, he finally meets with BP officials and has basically a handshaking meeting, so they're going to put a $20 billion cleanup fund in place. Let me explain something. Now, I'm moving off of the NASA announcement just a little bit. Let me finish with the NASA announcement first. And I go to scientific meetings regularly dealing with solar physics. I deal with the scientists from all over the world who are, in fact, projecting or attempting to project using models and physics, trying to project what the next solar cycle will be like. NASA, in its prediction, did not give any solar model. But I talked to physicists who regularly work in this field, and there is a model that has been most successful. That doesn't mean it's going to be successful in the future. But here's how it works. You take the magnetic field strength activity of the prior solar cycle, and they say that that predicts the level of physical activity of the sun in the next solar cycle. And so given that, the last solar magnetic field strength patterns showed very weak which would imply that the upcoming solar cycle would be very weak. There's another way of looking at this, and I've always said that the solar maximums of the year 2000 were very much peaked because of the activity of Hale-Bopp in the solar system, the large comet that frequented our solar system in the 1990s. So at any rate, there was a recycling of, or a cycling, I should say, of energy in the solar cycle, which caused it to peak around the year 2000 and then cycle down, oscillating down to a very low value around the year 2003-2004, where we started this zero sunspot cycle. So it's quite amazing that, in fact, we are setting into the new solar maximum. And could this cause us to swing way high again? Or are there other properties such as damping? Now, there's a property. Let's take a physical system like a drum head, where you hit a drum head, it starts to oscillate, it starts to produce sound, and then it dampens out. Could the solar cycle be like that? We had a couple big oscillations, a very high peak in 2000, a very low peak in the year 2003 and 4 at the solar minimum, but now it's going to come back up and dampen out because a lot of energy has come out of the sun in the meantime. So there's a certain way of looking at the sun that it's not going to continue with these wild oscillations forever. But we don't know that. We've never been in a situation like this, so there are not physical theories complex enough to deal with the true nature of the sun. Then you add in energy input from outside, such as comets that could come into the solar system and activate the sun's surface. We don't have information on that right now, but that could happen. So there's really, predicting the future is very difficult. If you understand the true nature of the sun, then predicting the future is extremely difficult. That's all I'm going to say. So I personally don't make predictions in that regard. Just I try and talk about it and then deal with issues as they arise. So, at any rate, that's the conclusion of my discussion, reaction to the NASA announcement, kind of the headline-grabbing announcement that there would be a massive solar storm that would take the world grid system out. And, of course, that's very possible. I've been talking about that for years. You have to remember also that when the solar flares come out of the sun, that they are directed in a certain direction, typically, and they have to come in the direction of Earth, or pretty much in our direction, for them to really affect our weather and solar grid system, or our electrical grid system, etc. So it's hard to say. We've seen big flares come out of the sun, but they just don't come in our direction. They're not directed earthbound. They're happening right now. I'm watching the screen here. As I say, I'm watching the solar activity in movie form. Over the past week, there have been some enormous flares coming out of the sun, but not directed at Earth. So there are many factors involved here. So we could have the solar flare of the century, but directed away from Earth. Because, as I said, the sun is a 360-degree sphere, and those flares can come out in any direction. So at any rate, on to the next topic. The Gulf oil spill, I saw, and I'm sure many of you saw, the reaction of Kevin Costner as he gave a plea for use of oil cleaning invention that he has, that apparently he was working with back in the 1990s. But as he went through his discussion, it was very clear that he encountered the same thing with government agencies that I have encountered. He said that over the years he had encountered all the government agencies, all the people in big oil companies that should have been interested in this cleanup device that separates oil from water. They have now tested it in a large scale and it works. Apparently, British Petroleum has ordered 32 units to be put on boats out in the Gulf and to basically take the oil and separate it from water and harvest this oil that is now in the all over. It's just in the Gulf. So it's amazing to see, though, that his statement was that I've been to all these agencies, all the government agencies, all the big oil companies, and nobody was interested. Nobody wanted to talk to him. Now that this is a big public issue, they want to pretend like they're really going to clean this up. And now they're interested in taking a look at his product. But understand that the problem is more than surface deep. I saw tonight movies of them burning the oil slicks on top of the ocean. The shrimp boats are out there trying to corral the oil, and then they put a incendiary bomb of gasoline or diesel fuel on it and try and ignite it. And you have this unbelievable black smoke chemical fire burning out in the Gulf, pollution, just an immense amount of pollution into the air, and all of that's going to go somewhere and fall back into the ocean onto land and make people sick, make the fish sick. They're showing where the animals, the sea life is now coming in very close to shore. So you have to understand that the Gulf of Mexico is polluted from top to bottom. It's not just a surface thing. We always see the cameras out there. We see them taking pictures of the surface slick. The pollution is deep. It goes all the way to the bottom and at every level. So make no mistake, this is a tremendous pollution event, and the Gulf of Mexico will probably be dead forever. It'll probably never recover. I'm not sure if I would like to eat shrimp that came out of the Gulf of Mexico. You probably wouldn't have to oil your frying pan to cook them, because the oil is already there, except it's not the kind of oil that you would want to eat. This is an incredible, incredible event in the history of the world. It is now passing through, the oil slicks are now passing through the Keys in southern Florida and moving into the Atlantic Ocean. So this is a tremendous, devastating environmental event. And it appears that out of complete stupidity, they tried to explode, create some explosions down in this pipe, and basically blew up and made the oil flow at a much faster rate. As a friend of mine said, you don't blow things closed, you blow them open. So who had the bright idea to try and explode something down there to plug this up? It's just a gusher of oil, and there's no way they're going to stop it. But as I said on my show last week, you have to understand the real problem with them capping and capturing this oil is fundamental. If they did, you would see the incredible amount of oil that is coming out of this single well, and they would have to have the ships lined up there one after the other, filling them maybe on a daily basis with this oil, the amount of oil that is coming out of this one well. And pretty soon people are going to say, hey, wait a minute, I thought these oil wells were just putting out a little bit of oil and we needed thousands of them. No, that's not the case. When they hit basically an ocean of oil down there, and it's an economic issue. You have not heard a word out of the Mideast. You have not heard a word, because they all understand that BP drilled into what we would call the mother lode. When you hit a giant vein of gold, you call it the mother lode. That's where the gold chunks come that break off and float down the river, and that's where the miners would work their way up the river looking for the mother lode, the original source of gold. Well, when they drilled into this reservoir down there, they basically hit an ocean of oil that's under high pressure. And believe me, this is not going to stop for years or decades until it completely pollutes the entire oceans of all of the world, at least the Atlantic, all the way up the western coast of Africa, all the way to England, up to the Scandinavian countries. It's going to pollute all of it. And they're not going to be able to stop this. There's more oil coming out of there than we can possibly use. So that poses a problem for the oil industry. If people really realize the amount of oil coming out of there, and then the fact that we really don't have any place to process that oil in this country, the people in the Mideast are not going to welcome our oil over there and say, would you please process our oil for us and so we can take it back. They want to sell us their oil because they're getting extremely wealthy and they've had a very good run at taking money from the Western world for their oil. So at any rate, the bottom line is it's an economic disaster for the oil industry in that now people are beginning to understand the volume, the sheer volume of oil that is available, and there's no such thing as peak oil. Not anymore. You can't convince me of that one. I never did believe that. By the way, I knew a guy that he's now since passed away, lived down in Arizona, a good friend of mine, and he worked in security, computing security in the oil industry. And one time he relayed this story to me. He said that he talked to some of the people in the oil industry, and he knew the geologists and the executives, and he asked everybody that he knew in the oil industry, he said, how come you've laid off all of these geologists and you're not looking for any more oil? They said, we've discovered so much oil on Earth we couldn't possibly ever use it all or tap into it all. So they literally, decades ago, stopped even looking for oil. And so this whole charade of peak oil and there's a shortage of oil is a charade. That's all it is. And with this oil spill, people are finally waking up to that fact on a large scale. And, of course, the oil industry controlled the government. Look at Obama. He goes in and he talks to these people like, oh, will you please help us, and would you please clean up the mess? No, what the president should be doing is throwing them out of there, getting the Army Corps of Engineers and U.S. Navy down there and say, fix it. He's the president. He's the president. He should be doing this. He's done nothing. He should be thrown out of office, and the BP executives and the entire BP company should be thrown out of this country, and we should fix it and take all that oil for free. And that's what exactly should be happening. But why wouldn't Obama do that? Because he's a controlled little puppet, and that's all he is. That's all he's ever been. That's all any of our presidents have ever been. Controlled puppets. I've always said, if you can see their name in the news, they don't run anything. They're just a puppet. So, at any rate, that's what's going on with the oil spill. It should have been tapped. It should have been immediately put the technology to put that upside down funnel on there, start harvesting that oil. But, as I said, it's an economic nightmare problem for the oil industry, because people would soon learn that those boats would be lined up, filling them up with this oil, and there's no place to take the oil. There's so much of it, we could not possibly use it all. And that's coming from a single well. So much for peak oil. At any rate, they're talking about cleanup. Obama makes a statement like, we're going to capture 90% of it in the next few weeks. It's a ridiculous statement. It has no meaning, and he has no information to back it up. The government scientists who are involved in projections on the outflow of that, I heard that one day last week, the outpouring of oil increased by 50% in a single day. The rate of outflow of oil from that oil leak in one day increased 50%. It's blowing open, it's getting worse, it's not getting better, and that thing is going to go on for years. So basically, the oil industry is balking because they understand the mess they have made in their own kitchen. They've ruined their own industry, and it's just a very complicated situation. But, as I said, Obama should just throw them out of there, or the president, a real president. Don't expect Obama to do anything, because he's just a puppet. But a real president would throw them out of there. He would grab the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, would take the U.S. Navy and send them in there and say, fix it. And don't come back until you're done. And fix it right now. That's very simple. And Obama doesn't have to be, or the president doesn't have to be an engineer to do this. He just directs traffic. That's his job. And he's not directing any traffic. He's like a little schoolboy in third grade trying to get permission to go to the bathroom. That's where I see Obama. At any rate, I don't want to dwell too much more on that because it's a terrible mess. But you can see the economics here and why the large oil companies have a real mess on their hands, and they don't want to stop this. They'd rather pollute and destroy the Gulf of Mexico than to admit that they have so much oil that we don't really need any more oil wells drilled. We don't need more oil companies, and we should simply be taking that oil for free. Why are we paying oil companies to for our own natural resources? That's just absurd. So at any rate, and by the way, that's where water is going. That's where water is going in this coming century. The ownership and control of water. So watch for the same exact issues in water. As I said earlier, about 15 years ago, I invented a solution for stopping hurricanes. And what this amounted to, based on my theoretical model and understanding of how hurricanes form, first of all, you have to understand how hurricanes form and what causes them, what power source drives them. It's a current source from the ionosphere that connects to storm systems out in the ocean. And if you need more details on that, look at my weather book, the Principia Meteorologia, the Physics of Sun-Earth Weather. It gives the details of this system of the natural system of powering hurricanes. And of course, once again, you have NOAA and NASA promoting this absolutely ridiculous concept that warm water causes hurricanes. Absolutely ludicrous, ridiculous. But once again, there's a control factor here in that the people controlling these agencies, the very high up controlling groups, don't want the public to know about this. They don't want good science out there for the public because it leads to some very difficult questions, including the fact that we can be harvesting the same energy to drive our power needs. We don't need oil. We don't need to be drilling down to the center of the earth to get oil. We have all the free electrical energy we need right in the atmosphere. It drives hurricanes, it drives tornadoes, and it could drive all of our energy needs. But be that as it may, I produced a system for controlling hurricanes as they come into landfall, as they come along the continental shelves that approach the islands and land masses of the eastern United States. That's where the main hurricane activity is in the world. So basically, what is the natural cause of a hurricane losing energy? It's not mountains and trees that the wind encounters. It's the fact that the electrical storm system shorts out once it hits land and salt water. A shallow bay of warm salt water is a very good conductor, and it literally shorts the electrical storm out. So the way you could cause this to happen farther offshore is to set up a series of buoys with basically weather balloons, helium weather balloons, and electrical conduits down to the ocean floor. And gridworks of these could be placed out in front of the impending storm, and they could be dropped from a bomber, in fact, right in front of the storm. We had all of this set up, could have been deployed, and then as the storm would come ashore, it would short out. Before it ever got ashore, it would dump its water out over the ocean. A lot of the damage caused by hurricanes is due to flooding after the wind goes through. So not only does it blow your roof off, then it dumps a ton of water on you. So all of this would be shorted out. All that activity would happen out over the ocean before it ever hits landfall. It would greatly reduce the energy of storms. Take a Category 5 or 4 hurricane, bring it down a few categories, or bring a Category 3 or 2 hurricane down to tropical storm level before it hit land. And that was a method I developed. But, as with Kevin Costner's oil separation technique and invention, you can't get these people to respond. The government agencies are inept. They're filled with people who don't know anything, or they can't do anything. All they do is fill space and collect a paycheck. And so that's the problem with literally everything that's going on today. We have huge government agencies.